I'm Jody Weitz, results and success coach, and these podcasts teach you how to make significant changes to live your dreams, make a positive impact on the world, and drop your regrets. It's time for you to get spectacular. Welcome back to Your Spectacular Life. I'm Jody Weitz, your professional coach, making sure that everything in your life is nothing short of spectacular. I'm here with Anne-Marie Engel. Hi, Anne-Marie. Great. It's good to have you here. I am going.
Hi, Jody.
Great. Yeah. There we are. I'm going to read Anne-Marie's bio so you can learn something about her. Anne-Marie Engel is a third-generation attorney and a fierce advocate for restoring integrity to the legal profession. With deep expertise in employment law, contracts, and regulatory compliance, she helps medium to large businesses in healthcare, corporate, and government sectors navigate today's complex legal landscape without compromising their values. Anne-Marie is the creator of Accountability Architecture Framework, which empowers organizations to ensure their legal teams act with true fiduciary loyalty and operational impact. A bold voice against complacency of big law and politicized legal trends, she challenges the status quo by centering constitutional principles, ethical leadership, and legal clarity. She currently practices at Crown Legal and her project, Flourish Professional Development, which focuses on women lawyers and leadership. Whether she's leading executive workshops or advising ethics-driven CEOs, Anne-Marie brings a rare blend of legal rigor and moral courage to every conversation. Wow, Anne-Marie, it's almost like an oxymoron, I've got to say. You know, politicized,
right,
and
absolutely.
Ethics and self-interest, corporate, and doing what's best for them. That is so interesting. You know, I wanna hear more about what got you more to that end of the spectrum. But I know coming from three generations of lawyers, your predecessors, was it always a foregone conclusion that you were going to go into the law? And
that's a great question. It was not for me, as I was a girl with two brothers, so it was not necessarily going to be the torch passed down to me. But my brothers, you know, didn't have much interest in the law. They veered more into computers. You know, computers were more the rage at that time. And my brother here, he's been a software engineer for his whole entire profession, and he loves that. But my story, or my reflection back on what it was like to have to be at the third generation of attorneys, is when I wanted something from my father, I had to give him three arguments. And that is a traditional legal point of reference, where you argue the facts, or you argue the law, and then you also argue public policy. So it was not, it was not like he articulated, oh yes, you have to do this, but I quickly learned, and I laugh because some of my friends and their issues with their parents, I'm like, didn't you learn how to get what you wanted from them?
Right. So whatever, negotiate.
Right. So if you can come up with facts, sort of the rules and public policy, I usually could get what I wanted. But so I didn't realize at the time that that's what I was doing. But it certainly, the idea of It's just learning how to get what you want. And
Exactly.
those were the tools I think I observed from my father.
And that's great. It really taught you. I mean, whether you're in law or anything, when you're in a relationship, it is a negotiation to get your needs met. I'd love to say everything comes your way, but everybody else has their own agenda, their own needs to meet, and I think it's an excellent way of training you to really become persuasive and to put thinking into it. Do I want this candy bar? What are the pros? What are the cons? And maybe you don't end up all the time with the things you want.
Yes, absolutely. It was definitely good training.
So, Anne Marie, let's be where we are today and fast forward. I really felt that what you spoke about in your written materials were really very much needed today because, again, ethics and not having a political agenda along with your law firm and not going, having again self-interest is really a challenge that I've been reading for a number of months. What got you into a values-based practice?
Well, I felt that there were things that were happening to the country, whether it was the COVID, let's just say the COVID protocol, which included the masks, which included, 6 feet distancing, which included so many different things, then that led up to that vaccine mandate. And what I felt was happening was there were not two sides being articulated. I didn't care one way or the other what people did or didn't do. But anytime I would go to question something, right? I am that, I grew up questioning and articulating my little arguments. So I wanted to know. Why? And I think the legal profession is in a unique position to ask why, without it being political, without it being controversial. We are the guardrails of society. We've always been that way. We get paid to be that. We swear an oath to the United States Constitution. I don't know if everyone knows that, but if you are a licensed attorney, you have sworn an oath to the United States Constitution and the Constitution of the state in which you're licensed in. So the Constitution for us is not something nice to look at, or it's not just for politicians. We have to go back to that. And it is these lockdowns and the decisions that were being made, at least arguably, were unconstitutional. But I was in a position, like many others, that said, well, just hold up, wait a minute. And we were shunned and silenced and set aside and retaliated against for just asking questions. And that should really tug at everybody, and particularly lawyers, because that is literally our job. We need to be able to look at both sides, and especially if we are advising a business or a hospital system, because I was working in a hospital system when this was happening. We have to put on that's the fiduciary. We have to say, it doesn't matter what Anne Marie thinks. It doesn't matter what Christy thinks. It matters what is best for the client. And my argument was, if my client is the hospital system and they're being given CDC protocol with money attached to it, you still must put on that hat to say, this doesn't pass the smell test, at least to acknowledge the legal risks of doing certain things even if invariably the CEO or the medical staff wants to keep doing what they want to do. But you as a lawyer at least have to say, hey, there's some legal risks here.
Yeah.
And the legal risk that I articulated, really, without knowing the half of it, because that was the other thing, they were not forthcoming about why they were doing what they were doing in the hospital system. And unfortunately, I think everyone has a story of a loved one got, they couldn't see the loved one before they die. They had patients in nursing homes. And again, I'm not a political person. And yet as a lawyer, I felt like I was sort of thrust into, like I said, asking questions, and then I was somehow in the, oh, you're bad. You're a COVID denier. I was called names for doing what I've always done in my life.
And
so that was the start of it. And then I just felt like so much came after that. I would be like, I would never advise that, you know, these controversies, even the marketing controversies that happen in this country. I'm just always like, where are the lawyers? Are the lawyers saying to businesses, don't do it. Stay out of it. It's a legal risk. And so that was sort of the, it was like every day, really, why are they doing that? Why is this business doing that?
So, Anne-Marie, why did you think, as I remember, went back then in the health field, if you were a denier, we always love to slap names on everybody so we can decide which side of the fence we're on, you know, instead of listening to people and seeing their side, as you're suggesting. But why were people so willing to jump on one side or the other, or, you know, shunning those who didn't agree with them, which again is, I'm going to ask the same question of today. What is your personal opinion of that?
Well, I think some of the tendencies that humans have in terms of like a group think or like pack thinking, you know, peer pressure, unfortunately. And I think that they were handed protocols. And like I said, and there was a lot of money and there was sort of an agreement that this was, they were just going to blindly say, this is best practice and we're not going to challenge it. And we're going to get a lot of money. And I think there was a lot of fear, like that fear around money, you know, everyone's worried about everything. Are the hospitals going to lose money because of this, because of all the extra precautions? And so unfortunately, it was sort of that group think taking over. And then it was very money driven, which again is I just felt like it kind of brought out some of the worst things of in humans. But I think what was going on behind the scenes is we were not understanding how much millions and billions of dollars were being sent through the government, like the states. And I was living in Idaho at the time. So the state of Idaho was getting a ton of money. Hospital systems were getting a ton of money, and they were getting rules. You must do this. If you're going to have this money, you must do this.
Goodness.
But they weren't.
Yeah,
you weren't really telling us that at the time, so that was the other thing. It felt a little deceitful.
So, coming where we are today, I love setting up where you started to question things, because in today's world, again, corporation. Again, I'm not judging good or bad, but we are much more willing to accept things, to say this is the way they are. It's too hard to fight, and just kind of go with the flow. But yet you are paid to be accountable, and you're paid to make whoever you work with accountable by listening to both sides and not just saying, you know, if I do this, yes, I'm going to be in the right side of that and not push whatever, and I may get money down the line, whether it's a sell, whether it's a who do you know, and in that favored group. How do you work with people in letting them know about that, to say, you need to think about your own values. Who are you aligned with? Are you thinking about your customers down the road? And whose best interest is this?
So it's funny because I had a client tell me that I lawyer like an Italian mom, and I am Italian. So how that pans out is I literally am looking at you going, oh, I know what you're thinking. I know what you're going to do. I know what you want to do.
Yeah.
Don't do it, you know?
Yeah.
And also just fiercely protective and fiercely loyal. And I will, if you are my client, I don't care if you like me. I will tell it to you like it is 100% because that is my job.
Exactly.
You know, and you will appreciate it eventually. And I've always appreciated being respected over being liked, because at the hospital system, when I'm talking about what I did, they didn't like me. I was not the one that they liked, but they had to have some respect for me. And I was one of the few people that even, like I said, I wasn't being Norma Rae going, no, no. I was just like, I don't know. I don't think this is legally shut, you know, open and shut case. So,
good.
But yeah, I think that, and you know, and that is, I will say, definitely my father, who was an extremely honest attorney. Like, that wasn't a question. Like, I think that was it. He didn't grapple with any of this. He understood, you know, was it understood the assignment and did the, and was a great attorney. But, you know, in terms of honesty and in terms of competence, and he was not, he's not the Italian one. He's a very soft-spoken gentleman about everything. So I do it in my way, and I'm also like it's just like, you know, part of who I am. It's like I think for lawyers, it should be fun to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Should be fun to say, you know, like in your profession, like these are interesting dilemmas, and that we should engage with them in a way that benefits the profession, benefits your client, benefits us as lawyers.
And
that was not happening.
Oof. Yeah, I would think that it would benefit them as a person who wants to grow and evolve, but also know both sides of the coin and really understand that, so they can make positive decisions for growth of their company, instead of just, you know, saying, okay, it's easier to do this again, or, you know, I don't want to upset this group if I don't do that. So, you know, you say you have an accountability architecture framework. Is that something that you work with clients, or something that you work with your own lawyers who you team up with? Tell me a little bit about that.
So I know you have businesses, and let's say you can't, you said, let's say you needed some help with something. I now, in moving forward, I just now say, let's say you had attorneys, and I would actually say, like, what have been your legal issues? What is your understanding of your legal issues? What have you gone to lawyers for help with? And maybe what is their response? And I would now become a little bit more critical of what I would say is a lawyer saying, come back to me if you have a problem, instead of a lawyer that says, let me protect you, let me, again, that Italian mom, but let me prevent, let's look down the line, and let me prevent any issues that I see coming, such as if you had a contract, let's say you were going to, contract with a person that, you were going to do some work with, even as a collaborator, an independent contractor relationship. Because I've had a lot of, I've worked with a lot of online entrepreneurs who would come to me with their conflict being played out with the payment processor. So instead of having it be professional, it was the payment processor. So the person would go to stop the check, so to speak. And then the payment processor would say, well, give me all the information. And you can put that in a contract. No, the payment processor is to be completely out of any disputes. So again, you might talk to a lawyer that says, you don't need a contract or whatever,
Oh,
or I'm going
goodness.
to charge you $1 million for that. But it's also to say, let me take a step back and see your growth. You want to grow. Maybe you want employees at some point. Maybe you want, to add products or services. Do you have a trademark? Like it's again, this is, I know it's nerdy, but it's fun for me, And so I'm saying, like, you are your own business. If you want to grow, then it's nice to have a trusted lawyer that can help you so that you can have then peace of mind and that you can be excited about your growth and that you can partner with people or whatever. I'm just thinking what somebody in your line of business, so people oriented, to have things go smooth. And if there's a dispute, then it's right there in the contract that this is how these things get worked out. So much better.
And
Better. And
I would
over.
pay you for that. I would definitely want somebody looking out for me. The fiercer, the better. The, as you say, Italian mothering, the
Right.
better, because I don't want to be broadsided by something I didn't know. And if I was a
Right.
business starting out, absolutely a contract, a trademark, the
Right.
way payment and receipts are handled. And I want everything spelled out so everybody is on board. I'm not saying that changes can't be made to paragraphs, additions can't be added, or we can't initial things, but that is kind of the basics of what is going on. And I can understand that you would be upset when they go to their own legal team and they just say, if you get in trouble, come back. It's like, let's just sit down, at least have a conversation of what might happen, what you want to happen, and are there any individuals that you may have challenges with at this point, so we can talk to them or write something about them. So, wow, I love the framework that you have in place. It's just the necessary questions. So, you also said you focus on women lawyers and leadership. I'm curious, how is it different working with women lawyers and the leadership that they bring, and what do you find you like about that, or like about that maybe working with men than other than men?
So I did this when I lived in San Francisco. I was the drug court director. And so I worked with all the politicos there, including Kamala Harris. And I wanted to, I don't know if my best boss was a man by the name of Rick Capretta, and he's in Mill Valley. He's a commercial property developer. Anyway, I was, and I did lead, I did what they call Leadership San Francisco. I think it's through the chamber. They have them in
They have them
most
in
cities.
a number of cities. They have it in my city. It's, I think, a year-long program
Yes.
of getting to know who's involved, the leaders, the business. It's a great program.
Right. So did that, and it was just I was around the leadership in San Francisco in general, and I felt like women were not being taught how to be leaders. They were maybe given leadership roles, but not taught how to be. And some of them were failing because of that. And just being a lawyer, I think that that just kind of I was became, you know, my audience, but it wasn't, it didn't end up being exclusive to women lawyers, but there were a lot of, because I, you know, I started working with my friends, to be honest. But I felt like, you know, yeah, I just felt like if we're not given sort of training, like real training, to be highly competent, to be really good at it, then who wants to work where they're like, oh, here's that the shrill, incompetent woman coming, that kind of a thing. And remember, this was happening now, it was almost 20 years ago, it was early 2000s when I was really focused on this. And I think that what I found were women just not knowing themselves, being burnt out, wondering how to navigate. And, you know, you don't want to ever be in a situation where you don't feel empowered or you feel,
Like
you know,
there's
like
an
you're ready to, like you're burnt out or you're ready
or
to
the
give up.
or there's imposter syndrome. I'm not good enough. I don't know. I'm not good in this area, but please go on.
So it was just things like, do you know how to run a meeting? You know, there were people that it was just down to basics. Do you know who you are? Do you know your strengths? Do you know how to run a meeting? Can you articulate your position, not just as a lawyer, but even in that meeting? And are you adding that? Do you understand what it means to add value in your role? So again, basic things, but I think some women were like, well, we're just there and we're going to be groovy. And it's like, well, don't you want to be really good at it too? And I just have always felt like it's a waste of time to not give it something your all and to be really good at it, or at least try, you know. And so that's what I was trying to do, you know, is just kind of help women with, you know, kind of like I'm definitely that systems thinker that I'm like, here's the framework for this, and here's, you know, that I had seven core competencies,
Oh,
you know,
nice.
the number one was really, do you know yourself? Do you know yourself at work? Do you know how you communicate? Do you know what you need back from people? And my thing was always, my bluntness is, and honesty is not for everyone, but you're gonna trust me. You're not, that's, I'm never gonna be the one that they're gonna be like, well, we don't know what she's thinking, or we can't trust her.
And
So those are the good, right, that's the good and
that's
the
positive because we're
bad.
never, I would much rather have somebody be direct. You can call it blunt. Maybe there's passion behind the way you present it, which is just fine if I know that about you. But I would much rather have that because I know where I stand and I know what I need to do. And you know what? When you're direct and you know yourself, I can come back with as much directness or bluntness as I need to say it. I could say, all right, Anne Marie, you're doing, you're coming with me with some intensity. Let's go get a coffee, let's walk around the building, and now then let's kind of breathe and talk about what I need to do, what you see, what's going on, what et cetera. And what a great gift to start with who am I? A woman knowing her strengths, her weaknesses, how she comes across, and is she communicating well with what she needs? Those few things are going to get her, quite far in a leadership role. And I think that's fabulous. Now, What's up and coming for you, maybe in the end of 2025, 2026? What are you excited about? What are you thinking about perhaps launching as a new service?
Well, what is interesting now to me has been the idea of what they call like the fractional lawyer, the fractional marketing fractional, and
I
that's like a
see.
fractional in-house counsel or a fractional lawyer, like in-house, because the in-house lawyers really can take on that strategy, that can really sit at the table and have a little bit more of that prevention, a little bit more say about like some of the marketing stuff or the HR stuff. And I love the Coldplay HR debacle, because that would be a perfect scenario where I think what I felt like was,
Was that?
I bet everybody at that company knew they were having an affair, including the lawyer.
Yes,
So
and
if I'm
this
the
is
lawyer,
just some background. Yeah, the Coldplay concert,
right.
where the was it the CEO and I'm not
And the
sure,
HR
and the
director.
HR director. Goodness gracious, caught them kissing on camera, and on the whatever the fan cam. So yes, that's the background. Go ahead if you didn't catch that about
Yes.
2 months ago.
Yes. So they were both married to other people. He was the CEO, and but she was the head HR. So even if they weren't married, it would still be an issue because she's the head of HR. So right there, that's a legal risk. That's all, that was all my thing. It's a legal risk. And it's many bad things, but it's a legal risk to have your HR director sleeping with the CEO and having employees. Like I said, I think most people know when stuff like that
Yeah,
happens.
you're right.
And how demoralizing that is for people to know that they can't then go to HR for anything, if, particularly if they're.
I didn't even think of that. I just thought about the families, the CEO, and the position of HR where they were. But you're right, because you go to HR, there's pillow talk. There's this person is doing this, and it's not confidential like it really should be. So as if you were a fractional lawyer at that company, what would you have done?
I would have looked at the man and said, stop it. Just stop it now.
Yeah.
You're going to lose your job. And I would look at her. I don't know how I would handle the HR director, but that would be a little bit more tricky. But we can't have the HR director being in charge of anything to do with them, the CEO. So again, this would be the preventative aspect of it would be, do you have even a policy in place for workplace romances? And that would be not married workplace romances, but you certainly can't have, I mean, I don't know anything about that CEO, but let's say he was sexually harassing somebody else. So what is that person going to do? Go to HR?
Oh no. Yeah,
So
it's
you,
go ahead.
so it's just a matter of like having some good policies and practices. But so it, stuff happens, and in that situation, catching wind of it, even if it was gossip, I think again, I'd not be popular per se, but I would tell them to stop. He's got to
Yeah,
stop. They've got to stop.
I think somebody like you, it has spine and background and an interest in making the company succeed along with people in it. You have got to step up and say something. And I can see you being fractional legal consultant, because you have nothing to lose. You're paid to be on the outside. You're paid to bring in ideas without possibility of losing your job. And maybe they let you go, but you, as a value-based legal counsel can say what needs to be said.
And none of this should be, to me, my opinion, none of this should be like I'm so outrageous, but it has become that really honest, straightforward truth teller is not always wanted in these circles. And people that warn you, like, I get it. Nobody likes the person being like, I can't. But at the end of the day, as a lawyer, I'm that I see it as my role. I don't know that I don't do that in my friendships necessarily. I can keep my mouth shut, but as a lawyer, I identify legal risk wherever I see it, and I try to be as diplomatic. Believe me, I'm from Detroit, so I always tell people I'm from Detroit. I have toned this down over the years. But yeah, don't you care? I mean, especially these CEOs or these entrepreneurs or people like you built something. Don't you want somebody to protect that? You can get set for a day, but in the long term, you're going to be happy that you have somebody that has your back.
And I'm gonna say, as your if I were your friend, then I would want you not to change and be exactly as you are, straightforward. Well, Anne Marie, it's been wonderful talking with you. I know my listeners have learned so much about what you do and your passions about, again, being straightforward, being blunt, and really protecting what you're paid to protect. So thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being so open to this. Not everybody is.
Oh goodness. Yeah, I definitely am.
Awesome.
Well, thank you for your time. It's again been a pleasure talking
Yes.
with you.
You too. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm so grateful that you've listened to the end of this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review it, and share it with your friends. I love teaching insights so that you can have a more impactful and meaningful life. It's my mission to build a thriving community of happy, fulfilled people. Want more? Visit my website at yourspectacularlife.com.